Last time I think I'm up for the feast. Got tracked down quite a bit of people yesterday and got them on the schedule and people bought more time and, but it's looking good. I think we're going to have some good messages that we'll all listen to from the feast this year. When we were building the sukkah yesterday afternoon, kept asking people, I said, well, let's turn to the verse and read it first. Let's turn to Leviticus chapter 23, starting in verse 40. And for those of you that don't know, everybody had to walk through it because we angled it and finangled it. But it's our temporary tabernacle we're walking through to get into the temporary dwelling and meeting room and tabernacle to worship in this week. Nobody volunteered yesterday to sleep outside in it for 7 days, but but let's look at Leviticus 23, verse 40, and talk about a few things that are in here. First of all, it says, and you shall take for yourselves on the first day the fruit of beautiful trees. I know different translations. Kimberly had several that she read yesterday when we were putting this up. Different ones say different things, but there's several of them that refer to fruit, and I didn't get a chance to look it up. I've done it in previous years. I believe it's because, you know, going back to the Hebrew words it comes from, it's inferred. But it says, and you shall take for yourself, in the New King James, on the first day of the fruit of beautiful trees, branches of palm trees, the boughs of leafy trees, and willows of the brook, and you shall rejoice before the Lord your God for 7 days. So the question I kept on asking was why we're supposed to take these four different species of basically trees, and what does that have to do with rejoicing and celebrating God? Now, if you ever saw some of the footage from Israel and Jews on the, not that they do everything right, but I'm just saying, for the feast, you'll see them and they're sitting there like this and they're praying and they're bobbing and, you know, they're going in four different directions back and forth and they got these strange looking things like this that they're using. And Joel went over to my room and got this from Mary because I had it shipped in. And pulled it out, different people were looking at the various, you know, the palm, the willow, the myrtle, and the etrog, which is from the citrus family, grows in Israel. And a lot of ideas and opinions and, you know, what's this got to do with the Feast of Tabernacles and why should we use it as worship? We got to admit, it sounds like a strange deal. I mean, what does this have to do with the feast and what are we supposed to glean from it? Now, who knows what a midrash is? Mike does. Okay. A midrash is when, like, 2 o'clock in the morning when everybody's sleep deprived, you're up throwing these ideas around about what it could be, and then somebody records it and it becomes doctrine. See, the churches do that all the time. They just don't tell you this. And then from doctrine, it turns into dogma, and we don't know, you know, we don't want to get into dogma is and what that is, and, you know, but dogma is not a good thing, usually. So we're not doing any midrashes, we're not doing any dogma, we're not doing any doctrines, because the bottom line, to be honest, it doesn't tell us in the Bible why we're supposed to do this. The only thing it tells us is that we're supposed to do it. It doesn't tell why. So any conclusions that you might draw are just that, they're conclusions. And if it sounds good, you can go with it, as long as it doesn't cause you to violate anything that God says. And unless something better comes along or somebody else comes up with a better idea, you say, hey, well, I think it means this. Sort of like last night at the Bible study when people were asking, you know, what about the calendar? What about the equinox versus the barley? It was like, well, you know, I think this. Yeah. No sweat off my back if you don't think so or you don't agree. You know, we just agree that we're doing what we believe and we're willing to talk about it and share. as long as nobody gets mad. So that's sort of what it is today, because it doesn't tell us why. It just tells us to do it. I wish it told us why, because that's one of my questions. You know, I got a lot of questions. I don't have all the answers. I got more questions than answers. But, maybe I'm just weird, because things like this intrigue me. I see, like a little kid, you know, asking, why is the sky blue, you know? God, why did you tell us that we had to do this? What are we supposed to get from? Because I know that we're supposed to learn something. Observing the Sabbath is so that we rest, we take a break. But we're supposed to learn something by doing it too. It's not just that he wants everybody to lay around and, you know, prop your feet up, and it's okay to do that, but we're supposed to get something from it. If we keep reading, it says, verse 41, you shall keep it as a feast to the Lord for 7 days in the year. It shall be a statute forever in your generations. You shall celebrate it in the seventh month. Well, you know, over and over it tells us that the Feast of Tabernacles is 7 days long. We're here for 8 days, and I'm sure somebody's going to bring up differences, and, you know, what's this eighth day about, and the feast is only 7 days. What's the eight-day picture? What is the feast picture? Verse 42, here's one that I think that I understand. I can be wrong, but I think I understand it. But I know there's some controversy over this, and a lot of people, nothing wrong with what they want to do, but it's in verse 42, it says, you shall dwell in booths for 7 days. People read that and they stop. I keep reading. It says, all who are native Israelites shall dwell in booths. See, I had some questions, and I said, you know, because, I mean, this is not attacking or saying they're wrong. Some people feel if they don't go out and they don't build a sukkah and live in it literally for the 7 days, they're not obeying what God said. There's nothing wrong with doing that. You can do that if you want. But you're not commanded to do it unless you're native Israelites. And I started looking at this, and I think that God was very logical in what he was doing here. How would you like to live in Jerusalem when 3 times a year all of the people are supposed to come up there, if it's at all possible? You save and you... They didn't have the Sheraton. They didn't have Holiday Inn, Motel 6, Scottish Inn, whatever you like, you know. Those didn't exist. Now, they did have some inns. Like, we know that when Joseph and Mary went, there was no room at the inn. They did have some temporary accommodations that you could rent. But they didn't have the big chains. And even today, if you're just going to go to Israel and go to Jerusalem and show up, you better have some reservations if you're going to show up during Feast of Tabernacles, because it's booked up. And if you got enough money, you can always get a room. They always put some aside. So if you start flashing enough cash, at a certain point, they'll go throw somebody out of their room if they have to. But you better prepare, because there's a shortage of rooms, even with all of the chains and everything, even today. When God said, all who are native Israelites shall dwell in booths, it was so that if you lived there, you had a house there, you had a dwelling there of some kind, you went and dwelt in a booth. Now, what did that do with your house? Since you can't keep it within your own gates, right? We don't have to go through all the verses. Assuming that, we don't have time to go through all of those verses. But you can't keep your feast like some people do. They build a little sukkah on their back deck, and then they sleep out on the back deck, and they observe the Feast of Tabernacles. It's sitting within your own gates. You can't do that. Even the Jews sitting at the synagogue, they have one at the synagogue, and then they build one on their back deck, and they eat out in the back deck, and the real hardcore ones sleep out there with the kids at least one or two or possibly 7 nights. That's keeping it in your own gates. That's not the point. The point is, you're living in the land, you're going to have 3 million people come and show up to worship, come to the temple, and God logically provided a very easy access for doing it. If you didn't like your relatives, you could rent it to somebody, your house to somebody else. If you liked them, you could give them the temporary dwelling. It created the ability for all of that to take place. if you had a lot of relatives, maybe you had some of them camping out on your rooftops, you know? Four families on the four corners or something. But in the spirit of it, you know, going out and renting something or staying in a temporary dwelling, it's not your house. It's not your own gate. So when you go someplace and you keep it, but yet I think that if we can put something up, even as a reminder, something temporary, we come through it, do it in some way, it still reminds us of what people were doing. You know, we were talking about, we couldn't come up with a saw. So we went off into the kitchen and we got some serrated, like, bread knives, and we were sawing the branches. Joel and some others, they went out scrounging and they came up with some lattice and a couple doors. You know? They didn't have bread knives and they didn't have doors and lattice out in the wilderness, you know. I'm sure they had some knives or, you know, something that they could whack, but there's, from what I understand, never been there, but from what I understand, there's not a lot of vegetation and growth out in the wilderness, but they came up with these temporary dwellings, whatever. It's an exercise of something to go through that I think is good, and you're commanded to do it on the first day, so. Verse 43 tells us, says, that your generations may know that I made the children of Israel dwell in booths when I brought them out of the land of Egypt. I am the Lord your God. So Moses declared to the children of Israel the feast of the Lord. So there's a lot of things going on. Coming up with the temporary dwelling, coming up with the four species, going out, worshiping God, and remembering what it all started, what happened when they originally came out of Egypt. And I think it's kind of interesting that he tells them in the Feast of Tabernacles to dwell in the booths, and here he brings them out at Passover time. Now, looking back to Passover, but in Passover, we're not commanded to dwell in a tabernacle for Passover. We're commanded to do that for tabernacles. So, you know, there's spiritual meanings to these things. Just on a purely physical sense, it would make more sense to do it at Passover because that's when they came out. But he doesn't tell us it's tabernacles. So, what are we doing this for? What are we supposed to learn? What does tabernacles represent? Things like that that he wants us to study and come up with the answers. So I'll give you a best guess, or possibly one of the things that we're supposed to learn by going through these. Like I said, several people took it, they started smelling like the myrtle, and nobody took a taste, but there's a midrash that talks about the four different species of vegetation and what they might represent. And it says that the etrog, which is this, it's the citrus family, it has both taste and a fragrance. So what is that? It's different in that aspect from the other three. It grows on a tree, just like an orange or something. They said, well, this could represent people that have both knowledge, and good deeds. In other words, they study Torah, they understand, try and learn and glean the ways of God, and then they go out and do. They help. They have the deeds that go with the knowledge and the understanding. More of like a balanced person. The myrtle. You take the myrtle, it has a fragrance, it smells, but there's no taste. Well, what's the deal with that? That could be you have good deeds, but you have a good, solid understand, you know, a lack. It might be you're new or intellectual level is lower, whatever the reasoning is, you don't have the deep understanding, but you're a good person and you go out and you do good things. Now there's a lot of people like that out there. If we take the palm, there's no fragrance, it doesn't really smell. What about taste? Anybody want to take a bite, you know? What are we going to do with this? What goes on palms? You have dates, right? So you've got taste. but no fragrance. Maybe with that, you have learning. And there are people like this. They have all kinds of knowledge, and they're studying, and they're learning. They never do anything with it. Some of them can be brilliant, but their life is really lacking in that they never go out and do anything. They don't have any deeds to go with the knowledge. It's unbalanced. There's people like that. And then if we take a look at the willow, no smell, no taste, no knowledge, no deeds, basically lacking in everything. There's people like that. But if you take it together, and if it does represent God's people, because in any congregation, in any nation, in any group of people that belong to God, you're going to have people from those four different categories, and on their own, you know, when it talks in the New Testament about we're all part of the body, we each have different functions, you know, unfortunately, or fortunately, depending on how you look like, you know, everybody, like in the football team, wasn't in sports, but I knew a lot of people wanted to be the quarterback, you know. Well, you can't have all quarterbacks in football. You know, a lot of people like to play golf, but, you know, others need this caddy. Well, everybody can't be the player. You got to have caddies, too. You got to have people that watch, or there's, you know, they can't make their money playing. And even with people, you know, as distasteful as it is, in every group, usually there's one rectum. But think about it, the body, if you didn't have that very necessary function, if you didn't have it, you know? Why God put some there? I don't know. Everybody wants to run them off, but it's there for a reason. You know, everybody can't be, and I know that it's the extreme, but I mean, if you think about it, God does things. He does, you know, sometimes it's like iron sharpening against iron, but together as a whole, those that are lacking, those that have an abundance, it's spread out to get, but even those that have the abundance, if it was only the etrog, you know, how'd you like this? Just this. Wouldn't you get kind of boring? That's like having just the manna. Manna was fulfilling. I mean, he lived out of it for 40 years. But it wasn't very long, and they kept saying, man, give us some meat. You know, this, what is it stuff? This manna, this really sucks. It's coming out my ears and so forth. Together, everything, God's creation, all of his people together, can be used as something to celebrate, to rejoice, to remember, and to worship the Lord. So that's my take on it. I asked a lot of questions. If you got a better analogy, let us know, because maybe that adds to it, or maybe we're wrong. But the bottom line is if we're commanded to do something, we should at least ask why. You know, when I used to look at some of the commandments in the Bible, I'd say, well, that's a dumb one. That doesn't make sense to me. Why does he tell us to do that? That makes no sense. And you know what? He never let me get an understanding when I would do one like that, because that's rebellion. That's like, I know better than God. That's dumb. I ain't doing it. If he wants me to do it, he's going to have to tell me why. But if we say, well, we don't know why he says to do it, but he says to do it, let's do it. If you come to God and you say, Father, I don't understand why you command us to do these things, but I love you, so I'm going to do it. Please teach me and explain to me why I'm doing it, so that I can understand more about you. Give me the insight to the way you work, so that I can understand why you would tell us to do something like this. Give me the ability to understand it. Think about your kids. If you tell your kids to do something and they say, that's stupid, I ain't doing that, Are you going to sit them down and explain? Now, maybe Dr. Spock says you should, but that's not the way it works most of the time. That's not the reaction that the kids get. Say, okay, I understand, Johnny. You don't understand that. You think I'm really stupid. So I'm going to explain to you why I want you to do this. If you tell your kids to do something and they say, okay, and they go off and do it, and they come back and they say, we did it and it's all done, is it okay? And you say, yes, it's fine. You say, we didn't understand why you wanted us to. Can you please explain to us why we were supposed to do that? Because we want to make you happy. So we want to know why we should do it so that we can understand and do more things. Are you going to sit down with your kids and are you going to explain it to them? Why? We're created in God's image. We should never think that we're, you know, he gave us these feelings, these things that we deal with, and he has the same types of emotions that we do. A lot of people think he's up in heaven sitting on his throne. He's always looking like this. He's not. He's our Father. And he loves us. And he sent his only Son so that we could have an opportunity to have eternal life and one day eventually live in his kingdom with him. And that kind of love, what do you think his number one goal is? To get you in the kingdom, if it's at all possible. If we come to him with love and we say, Daddy, we're doing it, please explain why. I don't care what it is. You know, use this for an example because it's, you know, Feast Tabernacles and we're doing it. And I really don't, I'm not satisfied with the answer, but it's the best that I know so far. I think if we can apply those principles to our lives, that we will grow in grace and knowledge and truth and understanding far more than we ever have before. So, thank you.
Mark, really appreciate that message. Really appreciated working on the putting up the sukkah yesterday. That's a tradition that we have based on scripture. You know, even if we don't quite understand it, we learn and grow as we do, just like the Sabbath, just like the holy days, just like the Ten Commandments. It all adds up to, just like Mark said, we grow in grace and knowledge. So let's rejoice in that. Take our hymn books and turn to 106. Hopefully we can grow together and not pick each other apart. Page 106, this song.